Welcome to this edition of my Software Quality Podcast. This is Randy Rice, and we're going to start out with a little bit of software quality in the news. Well, this is the August 6th, 2008 edition of the podcast, and as of this recording, American Airlines has just had a baggage system failure, and it's been pretty much resolved as much as I can tell, but as I wrote on my blog a few days ago, this one hit me personally because my wife and I, we were traveling to an event, and we got diverted because we missed our connection. They had to fly us through New York's JFK Airport, and as a result, our baggage also got caught up in this, and we also had some friends that were caught up in this. But anyway, the news sources called it a glitch, which first of all really irritates me because these kind of things I think are more serious than a glitch. When you consider the lost time, people getting to their destinations, for example, my friends, they spent all day in the airport, you know, waiting for the next flight. Many people, including myself, had to buy extra clothes and toiletries and things just to get by for a couple of days because we didn't have our bags. But anyway, here's what went on. Apparently, there was a software problem in the baggage handling system on Wednesday of last week, which would have been around July 30th. And it delayed flights, some causing cancellations, but anyway, caused a major luggage pileup there at JFK. And it says thousands of customers, according to the news reports that I've read, thousands of customers had to leave their luggage behind and hope that it'd be delivered later. And it's also kind of adding to the frustration that a lot of customers and passengers are feeling over the recent decision to start charging for additional bags, especially between flights within the U.S. and Canada. And apparently the problem started around 4:45 a.m. when some software failed in the computer that reads the barcode on each piece of tagged luggage and then sends that bag to the proper gate. And when the automated system went down, then the airline employees were forced to start manually sorting each bag by hand. And, of course, that quickly became an overwhelming task. And so some flights were delayed 60 to 90 minutes. Some flights were canceled. And so, basically, it was a big mess. And, of course, you know my, if you've listened to this podcast before, you know my attitude toward these kind of things is that, you know, my deal is to take it as lessons learned, but also to show the seriousness of what's going on here and that we know everyone makes mistakes. And so, I don't point my finger in a hugely negative way because someone made a mistake, but it's just one of these things, it reemphasizes again, even things that you may not think would be all that serious can be. On the blog also, it got me thinking about the importance of integration and interoperability testing and how many times we think we're doing these things, but sometimes we don't. And I don't know the exact role of integration and interoperability in this story, but it got me thinking about that kind of test. And so that's out there on the blog as well. Okay, well, I want to get to our interview today for the podcast. I'm very excited about this because I learned about a new tool for test data creation. And so we're going to go now to our interview with John Hugh of Grid Tools, and we're going to talk more about their tool solution for creating and maintaining test data.
I'm speaking today with Hugh Price of Grid Tools, and I'm going to be talking with you today about some of the interesting tools that Grid Tools has in terms of test data creation and management, primarily their GT DataMaker tool and tool suite. And so, Hugh, it's good to have you with us.
Hey, Randy, how are you?
Great, thanks. So, listen, the whole thing about test data, you know, people don't talk about that very much, I've noticed, in the testing field. They talk about all kinds of other things, you know, test tools, capture playback tools, test planning, all of that. But you really don't hear a whole lot about test data sometimes. And my theory has been mainly one of the reasons is it's kind of a tough topic. Can you tell me some of the issues around test data that you've seen, and maybe some of the reasons why you guys have brought GT data maker to the market.
Yeah. I mean, as you say, data's hard. It's complicated. It's very difficult to create. It's all highly interrelated. The major vendors have just kind of left it to one side. If you look at something like the QTP data sheets, they'll refer to Microsoft Excel as the data platform, which, you know, in my opinion, really isn't good enough. You know, you really do need to be able to create rich sets of data to put into these applications, whether that's directly into a database so you can test your batch programs and make sure you really are getting good code coverage, or whether it's feeding data tables or data streams into products like QTP and Quality Center, where you really are making sure you're having all the right buttons clicked and you are really stressing that code out as much as possible with a minimum amount of data. I mean, I think what we've kind of discovered over the last year in the testing community is that people are spending a lot more time on testing. They really are putting some good infrastructure in place, and it does seem to be a bit of a growth industry. But even when they put all this great structure in place and, you know, agile testing and V models and all that kind of stuff, there are still bugs in production. So how can that be? How can you still have bugs in production when you're devoting, you know, a considerable amount of your budget to testing? And the reason is that when you do your testing, you're actually kind of missing those important date boundaries, all those sort of real knotty little problems within the data. And as soon as that problem gets encountered in production, bang, you get an error. And that's a very common message we're getting from a lot of the testing vendors, that the data really is the forgotten piece of the dating of the puzzle, of the testing puzzle.
Right, and the idea that we have all the other great tools, but when you're just looking at an Excel spreadsheet to support those, you really are kind of at a very rudimentary level, as you mentioned. One of the things that you mentioned there was maintaining relationships within the data. Can you tell me a little bit about some of the ways that that can be achieved, especially by using a tool like a GT data maker type of tool?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the first things you need to do is to kind of build up a picture of your data, and that is why people kind of shy away from it, because it seems like quite a hard task, and it seems like it's going to be something at the beginning of the project which is going to take a lot of time to do. And we spend a lot of time building tools that kind of examine the existing data you have and very quickly build up a picture of the actual relationships within a relational database between tables. You can look at rows and sort of work out which date comes after another date, etc. But that should be a small part of the project. You know, for a sort of medium-sized sort of 200-table system, that should be something that takes between 3, 4, 5 days. It shouldn't take weeks. However, once you do have those relationships in place, you really do have some power. You can create smaller versions of your production databases, so you can pull out, say, just some, just the latest 3 months of orders, so you're not dealing with very large test databases. You can use it to generate orders, items, invoices, customers, and all in a highly interrelated way. So you can generate sort of a standard order, a standard invoice, and link them together across date boundaries. You can move time forward and backward. And all of those are the kind of things which before would be very hard to do, and people would generally end up writing code to do. And once you are writing code to test, then you've really got to test the code that's actually generating the data as well as part of testing the application. So you're sort of introducing a massive level of complexity and also an enormous amount of extra time.
Right, and not to mention that many testers aren't coders. I mean, there are some that are, but some testers just simply, that's not in their skill set.
Indeed. You know, the testers tend to be very thorough, very organized, and very structured. And what we're trying to do is to make them more thorough, more structured. That's really what we're about. It's not just about the testers as well. I mean, one of our biggest customers, they actually use it as a development tool. And the way they use it is that when a requirement document is created, they will actually include the data samples as part of the requirements, and they'll put them into DataMaker. So this is a government institution, and basically they'll say, right, we need a standard payer and a standard payee, and this is what my samples of data should look like. When the developer comes along, they actually have some real data to go along with the specification of the screen or the report, and they can use that data in their development environments. So they don't have to type it in again. They don't have to create it by hand. So it kind of travels along with the requirements and the specification. Then what happens is the tester also has access to that data. So no one is reinventing it or having to put extra data in. It's there with the requirements. They can then generate that data into their testing databases, you know, with the right date offsets and all those kind of things that the tester is going to be better at than the developer. And they can then test the system with the data that came along with the original requirements document. So it really is trying to make it kind of an end-to-end process. And you know, that includes all the different types of testing, whether it's unit testing, even up to some of the stress testing, where we can actually generate very high volumes of data with the characteristics based on the original requirements.
Right. Well, I think that's a really good concept that you're discussing there, because to me that's one of the best practices I've seen in defining requirements, is to provide some kind of example conditions or data with the requirement. But the problem with that so many times is it gets very detailed when you try to put that into the text of the document. And I could see a lot of value to what you're talking about there. To be able to reference a set of data that really conveys what the requirement is trying to have implemented. That's a really interesting technique.
Just if I could interrupt on that one.
Sure.
Another thing we've discovered in this particular thing is that when you're actually sort of putting together a very large project, it tends to come in components. So you'll have something like a vendor portal, you'll have a customer portal, you'll have a transaction portal, and you have all of these different things going on. Now, generally, you have to kind of do all this stuff sequentially, and you'll sort of wait for the vendor portal to be created, so then you can create the customer portal, then the product portal. Whereas if you can actually generate the data all at once right at the beginning, then you can do your demoing, you can do your documentation, you can do your training, and importantly, you can do your testing as well prior to having to wait for all of the upstream components. And that really has accelerated some of the projects we've worked on, to the point where the projects have come in sort of 6 weeks ahead of schedule, including being fully tested, which is kind of pretty rare nowadays in the IT world.
It really is. It really is. That's a really good point. You know, I think a lot of people in the testing world are familiar with the techniques of stubs and harnesses and things like that, but it doesn't really help you with the issue of data, does it?
Oh, absolutely not.
I mean, you can get the code in place, but getting the data in place is something else altogether.
Oh yeah, I mean, and you can either be, you know, have a bunch of testers sitting around waiting, doing nothing, you know, or the testers have got to go and sort of try and do their best job, best they can, to create some of this data, you know, which is again not really the best use of their time.
Mm-hmm. Well, something else that I'd like to get your thoughts on too is, you know, sometimes as testers we're looking at maybe a set of conditions we want to test, and we're kind of at a blank slate of data. And the question is, well, how do I create, you know, these thousands and thousands of rows that give me some kind of correspondence to my test cases that will supply the conditions I need? Can you tell me a little bit about how that happens in your tool set? In GT DataMaker, does it actually create just volumes of data if that's your need?
Yeah, I mean, it's fairly systematic, and it's, again, not too tricky. You know, you've got fields on a screen, you've got maybe columns in a database or whatever, and you spend a little bit of time looking at each particular field or column. In some cases, it might be a simple clicked or non-clicked event. You've only got two entries for that, so that list of values for that column would have two values in it. You might have a column which has a name in it, and you'd say, what you would do then is you would go off and look at our seed tables, and we provide a standard list of seed tables, you know, US postcodes, product standard product names and things like that. And you would attach some of these attributes to specific columns. And after a while, you've kind of built up a bunch of a list of values, or maybe you say, I want this particular column to be between 0 and, or say, 1 cent and $700. I want this ship date to be after my invoice date. And you spend a bit of time just working steadily through each of the columns in the worksheets or the data tables. Then you come along and say, right, well, now I need a load of data. Now, the trouble with that is, you know, once you multiply 2 by 10 by 50 by 100 by whatever, you start ending up with literally millions of rows of data, or billions. So what we do is we'll apply things like all pairs or combinatorial test analysis to allow you to generate the smallest set, making sure that you can cover your paired combinations or triple combinations. And then you'll say, well, okay, generate me 50,000 rows, make sure it's a nice all-paired combination, and we will use those lists of values to drive. And that's a good start. Then you get off and you run it. Then you come back and you say, well, we kind of missed that bit. Let's go back and adjust some of these functions, maybe change some of those list of values, maybe create our own seed table. You want to have product names in there which are much more pertinent to the customer. So you might just quickly create some seed buckets of data that would be used to generate the data. And then you go back and you regenerate. So you know, instead of having to create a spreadsheet and go and edit that spreadsheet and then go back and re-edit it and cut and paste and do all that kind of stuff, it's just a matter of going back and changing one or two functions and then regenerating and you iterate around. And like most things, it takes you three or four times to kind of get it right.
Right.
You know, you're not doing a massive amount of editing in each one of those iterations.
Cool. You know, I think it's really important what you're saying there, that this is integrated with your entire testing process, and you're using some of those techniques like pairwise to get, you know, efficient testing as well. One of the features that I found very interesting is the comparison feature that you have in your toolset. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, actually, it all comes back to, one of the things that I think we're really trying to do with Grid Tools is to kind of say, well, you know, the data tells the truth. You know, it's all very well sort of looking at a screen and kind of, you're looking sort of at a prism that's looking at a prism that kind of heads down to the data. If you're sure that this process did an insert, an update, or a delete, and you can sort of say, well, okay, we ran this batch process and it did the following 17 things to my data, then you've kind of got a proof point. You've actually proven that this actually worked. So one of the things we can do is to actually, A, check the quality of the data. So you put in a model, and we can check the quality of your data before and after a test. But a neat way of being able to do that is to actually checkpoint the data, run the test, and then compare it afterwards. And what we'll find then is that you'll find the actual reports on what's changed in your database, very focused, you know, much more sort of appropriate for the particular test that you're running. And we're finding that, I mean, this is done, is we create a XML report with some style sheets, and we're finding that people are actually attaching these XML reports to their testing documents and saying, yep, we ran this test, this is what it did. You know, as opposed to people having to browse around with tools like Toad or SQL Plus or some of the SQL Server tools and actually going off and saying, well, is the data correct? And you kind of got to look at it and guess. having a nice report that you can go back to the analyst and say, is this what you expected to happen? You know,
sure.
You're supposed to be updating that audit table at the same time, and they'll go, oh yeah, I forgot about that. That was supposed to be in my requirements document. You know, those are the kind of things that you know, these kind of automated tools around the edges, using the actual data, can really bring some quick benefits. You know, without having to do a lot of work. There's a lot of free information out there, so let's sort of kind of use it.
Right. That's outstanding. And of course, one thing One other thing that everyone is concerned about when it comes to test data is the security aspect of it, especially from the aspect of maybe scrambling the data or keeping parts of it anonymous. That's also a feature that you have as well, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, to be honest, that's kind of the main driver that people get in touch with us. I mean, there are some reported instances in the press, but we know of quite a few unreported instances where people have, where companies have been fined. So it's a real problem for CIOs and data owners within companies, especially with a lot of offshore work going on. So we have the ability to scramble sort of copies of production data whilst keeping the referential integrity intact. We use hashing algorithms and all that good stuff to be able to create these sort of sets of scrambled data. But while you're doing that, we also kind of say, well, you've just gone through all the work of defining what the model is. Why don't you start generating some data as well? Because the chances are when you generate the data, it's going to be better than the data that you've got in production, because a lot of the production data is the same. It's very, very flat structured. Most orders, items, and invoices are very similar. Whereas in the testing world, what you're really interested in are those kind of boundaries where, the ship date came before the invoice date. You know, what happened there? You know, it happens. It can be put in the system. But those are the things where you're really interested in testing. So we would see it as a natural progression. Start with some data scrambling, and then within a couple of days later, use that model to actually generate richer sets of data so your testing really, really does improve.
I see. Well, that's a very interesting concept as well. And I think as we look at the role of test data, it's not just as you mentioned earlier, Hugh, it's not just a one phase or one type of test concern. It's a life cycle concern, isn't it? All the way from the creation of your requirements all the way through to acceptance testing and even into maintenance testing and regression testing, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. You mentioned the word maintenance there. And I mean, one of the big problems that people have is they create these wonderful test sets of data, and then lo and behold, 2 months later, they come out with version 3.0, B of their product, and they've got to retest the whole system from top to bottom, but they've got all of their test data sitting back in version 2.3.able, So what we do is we can upgrade all of your test cases so that all of that data that was sitting there can still be used, and we have a very powerful facility called inheritance, which allows you to, instead of copying data, you inherit it. So you create standard data templates. They're almost like data objects or the equivalent of object programming, which allows you then to just make a change to maybe your 2.3A test, and that will ripple up to your 3-point Baker tests. So allowing you a great deal of control over and reuse. I think one of the things we found, especially with programmers, is that they do have lots of good data sitting around, but it tends to be sort of sitting in spreadsheets and SQL files and flat files. And what we're trying to do is bring a lot of that under control, and also allowing everyone else to reuse it. Someone's got some good work, let's let the world know about it.
Absolutely. And all of this data can be shared. From what I understand in reading about your tool set, I mean, you can create shared repositories, right?
Absolutely, totally. That is the idea of creating a test data warehouse, so that instead of this as being a sort of off to the side and people just requesting copies of production data, there is a test data warehouse. It is very much fundamental to the whole testing strategy, and especially with the testers out there, they are really into tools. A lot of automation techniques and things, and this kind of fits into that, putting it all into a structured environment and reusing and centralizing.
Right. Well, that's really outstanding, and it really does form the basis for some of these other techniques that we use in automation. The data driven, the keyword driven, and all of that. Well, Hugh, how can people find out more about the Grid tools and about GT DataMaker?
Well, you can go to www.grid-tools.com and have a look on there. We've got a lot of online demos. which are, they're quite good. You know, they take about maybe 10 minutes, and they're a good place to start because you can sort of pick a particular problem that you have a look at it, get a feel for it, and then generally we'll offer the tool, some parts of the tool you can download off the website. Generally it's worth having a chat with one of us here, and then we'll organize some kind of trial for you to play with it, you know. And we would generally say within 2 to 3 days you would be creating much better data than you had prior to having the tool.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, do you have anything else that you would like to mention before we wrap up today?
No, I think we've pretty much covered it. I mean, I just think that data is the forgotten component, and we're working very hard to kind of add in a lot of extra facilities around data. You know, we're sort of trying to get some stuff going on data flow modeling and things like that, and really working on a much more data-centric approach to testing. But if you've got free information, let's start using it.
Yep. Well, that's awesome, and I'm a kindred spirit with that, with your belief there that it all goes back to the data that we're using in testing. So, well, Hugh Price, thank you so much for your time today, and thank you for being with us on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you very much, Randy. It was a pleasure.
Well, thanks again to Hugh Price for being our special guest from Grid Tools today to talk about test data creation and management. You can learn more about their tools once again at www.grid-tools.com. You can also learn more about test data at riceconsulting.com. I have some articles out there on that topic. And I also encourage you to check by the website for all kind of new developments and some of the e-learning things that we're doing. Also to keep up with where I'm going to be perhaps in your area in the near future as well. So once again, thanks for listening today, and I look forward to seeing you next time.